right, we are plugged in and ready to rock and roll. You're listening to the Kraz Files podcast with Adam. It's Tuesday night here in Sydney, Australia. Great to be on board. And I'm plugging in tonight with Paul English, all the way from the UK. Always great to have Paul on for a chat. It's been a while, so we get you on more, Paul. But we're just going to chat tonight and about the current system around us and try and break all this down a little bit. And I say always thanks to my members. You helped me to keep my website up and running and secure. So thanks for plugging in and check out the website, krazfiles.com. Always tons going up there. And everything's connected to that website now, which is great. So we've just done a bit more work on there and added some new categories and things. So hope you are enjoying that. And you can contact me through there as well, as always. So good to have you on, Paul. We thought we better start recording because we're losing too much daylight having conversation before the show. But everything's coronavirus, man. Everything coronavirus. I've been saying on podcasts, it's coming out of the drain pipes. When you go to the toilet in the morning, there's this coronavirus echo coming out of there. People are it really is insane. I've been saying on my last shows that this really is a full-on media war against the public, because this whole coronavirus thing, it really is the mainstream media pushing it, and they're pushing it through everybody's devices and through our TVs and radio and everything like that. If you were to turn all that off, just shut it all down and sit in silence by yourself, well, then you're cured, aren't you? It seems that you just wouldn't know that this is even happening. So it really is a big media lie. That's what I do know, that they're pushing. So I'm just connecting with great folks like you over the weeks, and we're just talking about this because I've never seen anything like this in my life, where the planet is being stopped like this. I mean, it's really phenomenal what I'm seeing. It's really incredible here in Australia and Sydney, and all this social distancing and things we can discuss a little bit tonight. It got worse just last weekend. We were forced off the beaches. There was helicopters around, which is crazy. Australians live on the beach and they just can't get us off there, but it's getting a bit funny now. And probably the biggest thing here is the social distancing. It's just, it's on screens, it's on council screens, it's on posters, it's everywhere you go. They're pushing that's one thing I've been following and just trying to follow international news. You're in the UK. It's good to plug in with you, see how your prime minister is. He just got out of the hospital there with his bout of the virus. But incredible times, and I keep saying it's like we've entered an old episode of the Twilight Zone, old analog black and white episode, and we're in some alternate reality. And I'm just waiting to wake up. But it continues every day. And I don't know, I can't really put my finger on where they're going to take this or what's really going on. I'm just following all the bits and pieces and trying to connect it as best I can. Otherwise, it gets too confusing for people. What are you seeing? What's your ideas on all of this? You can go as deep as you want. You can swear if you want. I don't care what you do. I don't censor anyone here. But what are you seeing in your part of the world? And give us your unique, honest thoughts on this current coronavirus situation right now, my friend.
Yeah. Well, it's good to be back. It's nice to be back. I can't remember when we last did a thing, so that's
last
great.
Year, yeah. And,
yeah, okay, last year. So it's strange, though, the passing of time, internet time, has changed my perception of time in many ways. So and some things that seemed a long time ago happened just a few weeks and vice versa. So, but it's good to be back. In terms of my unique insights, I think everybody's got their own unique insights, but they're generally going to fall, I suspect, within a pretty confined space due to the nature of the kind of information that we get to graze upon, you know. And the mainstream media, the way that they are handling this is just as important, if not more important, than the perceived apparent so-called disease. I mean, my take on it is it does exist. I know I have personal contacts who've suffered from it, who've had it a few weeks ago and come through it. And two, I've also got connections to family members who've had it. I've even had a third-hand discussion with a virologist relayed to me up in the north of England where I have family. And they'd had a discussion several months ago, really before this fully took hold. And that aspect was with regards to the Chinese at the time. There aren't many virologists in the UK, by the way, and there certainly aren't many up at this hospital. About five or six of them in the department, but he consults with the UK government. And they were discussing, had the Chinese been helpful? And he said, oh, no, not at all. So there are so many different threads and angles to this. We've got that aspect. We've got the background of, say, the Chinese and USA trade war, or whatever we want to call it, because the Chinese were playing, you know, fast and loose with the exchange rates for the past few years. To do certain things. We've got, prior to that, going back 20 years, 30 years, we've got the exportation of American technology to China to boost China's ability to be this manufacturing hub. You've got that going on as an element. We have the world banking system absolutely, you know, dysfunctional, and has been for a long time. It's held together by, you know, the baling wire and glue of the press, and the ability to keep printing money ad nauseum and lying about it as they do so, and making us pay. Usually this is the traditional method. We always pay for their mistakes. They dump the bill on the world, and the major corporations, of course, are bailed out. So you got that going on. There's so many threads into it that this seems almost as if it's the answer for the elite, as it were, to many of their problems, many of them. And it's also, I think we have to see it as being a drive towards this consolidation of their particular pet project, which is this one world government thing. And I think that the virus, let's just call it that for now. Other people might want to call it something else, but I've just got to use something to describe it. The virus tends to cover so many bases for them. And when you were saying earlier just then, you know, that you've never, none of us have ever seen anything like this. It's ridiculous, really. If we think about it just purely in terms of supposedly a transmittable disease, and there are questions, I'm not saying that people aren't transmitting it, but what I've found, I don't know what it's like for you, what I've found is I can't find a reliable data source, one that I trust. I don't like the reporting much at all. That's understatement. I find the reporting ridiculous. We keep getting all these death figures. And I was mentioning to you just pre-show about death figures that I just received only yesterday from the United States. And I've got a little chart here in front of me. You don't really need to see this, but I can just get, this is from the Center of Disease Control. This is just another conundrum in the mix, right? And this is data as of April the 13th, 2020, so just yesterday. And it's got a list of the last 10 weeks or so of deaths in the United States in total, death from all causes. And next to it, there's a column, death from COVID-19. So back at the beginning of February, on the 1st of February, nobody died from COVID-19 in the United States, but 56,000 people died that week. And the average, it seems to be, for America, is about 55,000 people a week die all the time. Right, from whatever causes, road accidents, this, that, and the other, old age, blah, 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 blah. And starting around about the 14th of March, the first COVID-19 deaths arrive in the chart. But by the time we get to the 11th of April, I just wanted to mention this, the 11th of April statistics are not 55,000 people dying last week. It was just 10,000. So there's been this strange situation in America where the overall number of deaths across all causes has dropped from 55,000 a week to 10,000. That means 45,000 people who should have died last week, according to the momentum, didn't. And there was about 1,000 deaths from COVID-19 previous week, about 3,000, according to the data that we're getting. So I tend to what's that all about? Really, what I don't know what you think that's about. I've had a chat with someone, and they were saying that because people are not going into the hospitals, they're not dying, which I know is sort of a backhanded way of addressing things. But no one's is it because no one's doing anything? No one's driving any cars, so no one's getting knocked over. Maybe we found the solution to people dying. It's to sit still and not do anything. I'm not arguing for that, by the way. I think that would be a bit tedious, really. But these strange anomalies that keep getting thrown up with this. And I think all of us have to ask, where are we getting our data from? And do we trust it? do I trust this data? Well, this comes from the CDC, the Center of Disease Control. It's on the cdc.gov website in the United States. So you can make of that what you will. That wouldn't seem to be a statistic that's in support of, you know, increasing the hysteria, which is what it is around COVID-19. Mm. So lots of strange little things coming up. And maybe you've also heard of this, a lot of people discussing 5G at the same time, whether there's a direct link or an indirect one, I don't know. But yet again, another thread into this mess, this sort of media virus, which I think is more deadly than the actual physical virus, this mind virus that the media are continuing to communicate, really.
Mm, yeah, I know. It's hard to say, isn't it? It has. I don't think that the 5G is causing any virus, but I think it adds, to the, I think it adds to, you know, problems with human health. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've talked a lot about that. Corona is the field around high voltage electricity. It is the breach of corona field that is the basis of lightning. So corona radiation kills most high-voltage electricians by the time they are 55 years old. So corona severely damages the reproductive cells in the liver. Corona causes sterility and miscarriages and infertility and many other illnesses. Corona is an EMF field that is generated close to high-voltage power transmissions. So now, you know, with this, EMF yep. all around us, Wi-Fi, with 5G, with all our devices, with everything that we use in our modern lives. I mean, and we think about flu symptoms, you know, this would have come into play when all our power lines came in, you know, in the old days, you know, that's mm-hmm. when the flu started coming in. And I think that this has a big, this is a big one in regards to us not feeling well and being run down. And we've been talking a lot on this show about Wuhan, where I just sent you a picture then. You can see in your Skype, the pollution in Wuhan is it's just the contamination, environmental pollution over there is disgusting beyond belief. It's well known for horrific contamination in that city and people protesting about it. I mean, you can just, it's just a dump. This is the same in New York. And I was talking to Jim West about how they're burning in New York new fracking fuels, which is releasing new chemicals, new to humans, into the atmosphere in New York. Mm-hmm. The smokestacks there, the days where we're seeing a lot of deaths is what Jim West covers, and we talked about it on a show in New York, high death rate days, also with his plume apps, high pollution days in New York as well. And this also ties into the so-called measles outbreak last year in New York, where they brought in mandatory vaccinations, you know. This coincides with terrible pollution. And for me, more than 5G, I would say terrible pollution would be an obvious cause for respiratory disease in people. And I think in China and New York, in Milan, another contaminated city, it seems that the coronavirus is really striking cities around the world that have high pollution. And people are going to be sick with respiratory illnesses anyway. And we do know from the Department of Health in Italy, we put up papers on that most people who are dying of the so-called COVID-19 have serious, most of them underlying already pre-existing medical conditions that they're dying for. And that's what we've been talking about. I mean, if you stopped on any given day a year ago or 2 years ago and said, I wonder how many people died in Wuhan today, or I wonder how many people died in New York today, it would probably be a lot. I mean, people die everywhere every day. But as you said, yeah, the tests are very, very, very strange. And I'm just trying to look at this with an open mind. And there seems to be nothing but problems here in regards to these tests. And, you know, I wouldn't want to take one because they could just come out anyway. And, you know, I think that we just don't know what's really going on here. And in Australia, they've really been desperate to chalk deaths up, you know, as much as they can. And the last few were really elderly people in their 90s or late 80s in some nursing home somewhere who they didn't say died of COVID-19. They just said it was kind of related. So this elderly person who was 89 died in a nursing home in some place in Australia. But it could have basically, that's how they're saying it, been COVID-19 to scare the public. But it wasn't in my books. And I bet you if you tested that person, that yep. elderly person, it could have been something else. And you mentioned John Rappaport. He's on top of all this, and he put out an incredible article, Peter Doshi, I think it was, and that was in the British Medical Journal, and it was an article documented talking about hundreds of thousands of respiratory samples taken every year from the United States from people who have the flu, and most of them yep. coming back with no flu virus present in those samples, but they had the flu. And so, you know, this can come down, Paul, to a lot of things in winter, a lot of things, which we can talk about more in the show as we go on. But this whole thing is very shady to me. How many people are actually dying? What's really going on? We just don't really know. And it seems to me, as we were saying, the media are just, it's just disgraceful what they're doing. And it is hard to watch. I have to watch it because just to do the podcast and break it down. But what they are really doing, jorking, trying to get these numbers up and blame it all on this, it's really a disgraceful effort. It's smoke and mirrors here, man. What do you think with all that? Do you know, how can we really say when they've got a virus running amok on the public and around the world, that really controls, doesn't it? Because people are in a fear state, and I have friends who are in a fear state. I have neighbors who are in a fear state. They think they're going to yep. get this virus, and they're so worried. They're almost making themselves sick. Whereas me, I'm not concerned about a virus, really. I'm concerned about this kind of police state that's being built around me right now and the loss of my freedoms and health freedoms.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, you mentioned John Rappaport, and I think he is, certainly those articles he's done over the last few weeks, I've found them probably the most useful things so far because they are precise and he quotes sources. And you have to say that when he writes these things, he is reporting. And, you know, I know this might seem a bit tedious, but
it's what the media should be doing.
Well, that's right. There's the word report means to provide a factual account of. That's like they have in military service.
Don't see that from the Guardian, do we?
No. You see, that's what a reporter is. But what's occurred really within the mainstream media is that there's been a shift from the emphasis on reporting, which is necessary, into journalism. And, you know, traditionally, what was a journalist? Somebody who kept a diary with their thoughts and feelings. Now, I like journalism too. You know, if you're to separate the two and be very clear about it. Unfortunately, we're overwhelmed with journalism. We're overwhelmed with a sort of hysterical, touchy-feely communications style, which is not imparting clarity at all. It's not military, and we need a military discipline, really, around this situation. They keep talking about it sort of like we're at war with this virus. Well, okay, that's one way of describing it. If we are, can we have some military-style reports then, please, with accurate figures? For example, people are dying. People die all the time. Why am I not seeing each day how many people would have normally died at this point last year when this virus wasn't around to how many are dead now? It would appear that it's less now from the figures I'm seeing. Mm. But why don't I get this from accurate government sources? Why all this appealing to emotion? It's ridiculous. Mm. If you go back and you can see the sort of condition that we've been brought into, it's childishness. We're in a sort of infantile emotional state around a lot of things. I'm not against infantile emotion, by the way. I think there's a place for it every now and again. Everybody needs to indulge a bit and do things like that. But it's not a particularly useful platform to develop truth or some clarity and understanding about what you want. If we go back, say, 100 years, let's do that. 100 years ago, World War One had just finished, and 10 million people at least had died, probably considerably more than that. At the tail end of that, we get the Spanish flu, so named. It didn't start in Spain. It was just that you could actually examine, you could do autopsies. They did things and kept the bodies in Spain where they could then be examined to determine what was actually really going on. So the Spanish flu kicks off in 1917. It then lasts for about 8 or 9 months in the trenches, secedes a bit, and then it comes back with a vengeance. And by 1925, 27, it had killed something like 50 million people. That's quite a lot. Then you've got the Wall Street crash. You've also got the Russian Revolution going on, killing 50, 60 million people during the 1920s in horrific bloodletting. We're talking a colossal loss of life when the world population was under 2 billion back then. It's now nearly 8 billion. We've not had anywhere near the colossal loss of life. And the question I'm coming to is this. Did they shut down civilization in the 1920s? They did not. You don't shut it down. The economic devastation that's going to be wrought by this, I suspect, and I'm not the only person thinking this, I'm sure we've all thought it, is likely to be considerably greater than this. The cure is going to be far worse than the disease. Right now, we've got small and medium-sized companies and businesses going out of business.
Mm.
This is a key part of it. This is one of these other strands, this thread in this sort of tapestry that's on the loom that's been woven around us, and we can't see the full pattern yet. That's what they're seeking to do. I think there's answers to this, by the way. It's not all sort of we must go along for the ride. And our questioning attitude, I think, is a symptom that we don't want to go along for the ride. We're trying to find out where it's headed to start off with. Although many of us, I think, have got a pretty good idea. But small and medium-sized businesses are going to go to the wall. Now, no one's felt it just yet, although the other week there's something like, 10 million people in America are out of work over the last 3 weeks. 10 million. It's quite a lot. And what's occurring? Amazon, I saw the other day, they'd recruited 75,000 new employees towards the tail end of March. They're about to recruit another 100,000. Another 175,000 people. Now, on one level, people go, oh, that's great. Deliveries are going to get through. But that's 175,000 jobs that used to be done by small and medium-sized businesses supplying these markets. So what's occurring? Is it yet again, and it is, by the way, the movement of ever more economic commercial control into ever fewer hands? That's exactly what it is. That's definitely an aspect of it. Mm. And this is a key part of the problem. You know, we know that these guys are always banging on about their new world order and their one world government. Okay, I'm not into one world government at all, but I am for a new world order. It's just that in my new world order, the sorts of people that have been proposing this are not included. They don't get any jobs. In fact, I would like them to pay for it and then they can clear off and we'll let them live. Now, these are just words in the air. I accept that. But we have to begin to orientate our thinking. It's going to be difficult, you see. You mentioned the fear that some of your neighbors are in. And realistically, that's the biggest hurdle that we face. It always is that it's the problem with democracy as well. You know, it is mob rule. And once a mood has taken hold upon a mob, and you may have at one point even been in one, you know, not that you were a mobster or anything, but if you're in a crowd and it decides to go one way, a bit like a stampede, you know, in physical terms, you don't have many choices. You either say, I'm going to resist this, in which case you're probably going to get trampled to death, or you'll take your chances and go along with the huge movement of people and hope that when it's stopped moving, you've still got all your limbs attached to your body. You know, you go, whew, I got that one. Some people didn't in this big stampede. And that's the problem that we face is it's not that even our neighbors couldn't understand all this stuff. It's the amount of time and resources and communications firepower that we have available to us to achieve it in time. Can we do it in time? And, you know, if you're prepared for a tsunami in time, i.e. there's a mountain and you know how to get there or whatever, then a tsunami might not worry you too much. But most coastal towns are not prepared for a tsunami. So it's okay saying, well, it won't happen. But if it does, you're toast. You don't really have any options left. No one's going to get out of that thing in time. And that's kind of what we're looking at to some degree. So many aspects to this. I do view the economic one as the key one because the system has been bust for a long time, not just a long time. And it's held together by all of these, ridiculous financial instruments and other arcane things that they get up to. And the bottom line is whenever push comes to shove, it is always the multinational corporations and banks that get bailed out. And apparently, you know, who pays for this? I do discuss this with people who don't understand these issues just to get them to be a bit querulous about the whole thing, to question it, to see what's going on. And, you know, over here, I don't know what it's like down there, but over here we have a Chancellor of the Exchequer who says he's going to or has made £380 billion available for dealing with this. I think in America they're talking about $6 trillion, aren't they? $6 trillion or something. Okay. So these are just numbers and words that come out of people's mouths, and they're bandied around. And yet there is an expectation, possibly, that this money is to be paid back. Why? Why? why do people not question where it comes from? Oh, it's okay. Don't worry. We've got a virus. I just happen to have 380 billion in my back pocket. Let's go. It doesn't work like that. And of course, there's never any discussion about how it does work and why it's always working in the favor of the few and against the interests of the many. So all of this is about something that is on every level, whether it's the actual disease itself, the reporting of it, the underlying economic manglement that's taking place, the removal of independence from independent business owners, which is a key thing. It's a matter of being, you know, motivated in life. People build businesses not just for money. This is key. It's part of the whoop and woof of life. It's part of your and my culture that these small shops and small businesses exist. I prefer them personally. But of course, we've all been sold, have we not, relentlessly for decades, that globalism's the way to go because we keep costs down. But this disease, you could lay squarely at the floor that globalism is a complete crock, and it is. So we don't need it. It's totally surplus to requirements for productive national living. And this is an opportunity, I would suggest, for people like us to bang this drum and to get people's attention around it. It's because they moved the entire manufacturing base to China, something that was planned years ago. I remember sitting in a meeting with a guy in the 90s in London when I was being taught all about banking and stuff. He told me then, he said, they're going to build China up and they're going to run America down. This is in 1994. You know, that's a long time ago, really. Now it's 26 years back, isn't it? And I'm saying, really? There was no real evidence for it. And we were also discussing that they want to remove cash. Well, all of these threads that I'm touching on here that you've mentioned so far, they're all wound up in this, are they not? All of them. Now we're going to get a vaccine, are we? And they're going to possibly put some kind of a chip in the vaccine. Can this be done? Yes, it can. Technically, it can be done. And that will allow you to what? Buy and sell. So there's the mark of the beast from the book of Revelation. All these things are there. And this puts more and more control in their hands. But of course, it's all for our good and benefit. And really, what we're looking at, you know, in simple terms, is a grandiose protection racket. It's a protection racket on a global scale. You need this. We can protect you. What a terrible disease. Everybody's dying. Believe our media sources telling you that everybody's dying. It's awful. Believe that too. Don't question it, because that means you're a troublemaker. And we're going to save you. And oh, by the way, if you step out of line, zap, you can't buy anything. You can't sell anything. And, you know, it comes back to China as well, doesn't it? You're probably aware of their social credit system and all that kind of stuff. So that's what they're looking to replicate globally. They've been using China as their little sort of prototype laboratory. And the whole thing's total crap. We don't want any of it. I mean, I would thank them for that. Every single idea they've got is useless. Every single one. These people that are in charge are totally surplus to requirements of healthy living. We don't need them at all. You know, where does all this stuff emanate? Well, it's been going on for decades, as you probably know. It's been going on intensely since the end of the Second World War. But it was present well before that, you know, going back 200 or 300 years before that in its modern form. And here we are, almost like at the zenith of their task to subdue the earth in all these ways. And unfortunately, the logic that they've got with the virus is difficult for us to get to grips with. I think it's why many of us have probably been, you know, slightly rudderless for a few weeks looking at it, going, what on earth is going on? And it's a completely sensible response, I think. So I don't want to get too adamant even about the things I might have said now, because who knows, whilst we've been talking, some new factual or mythical bilge has just occurred in some media report, and we're going to go, oh, is it really about that? I hadn't even considered that angle. So I don't know, but it's big. Every thread of concern that you and I may have and your listeners is all present here, isn't it? It seems to me it is. It's all present here. There's a fight afoot. It's as if a line has been put down in the sand and they're really going for it. They really are going for it, because I think they didn't have any other choice, frankly. If you look at recent sort of global political movements and things they've been banging on, haven't they, against populism, which is hilarious when you analyze it. What, this is just what the people want. Oh, it's evil. What the people want is evil, is what they're saying. Populism is terrible. I think maybe what we should do is all move to Belarus. We should all know. I don't know if you've seen the pronouncements from the Prime Minister of Belarus or whatever his title is, but he sounds like my kind of guy. They're all still playing football out there. And he said, ah, we're not having all this globalist nonsense. He said, best way to deal with it, lots of hot saunas and plenty of vodka. I mean, who could like a guy like that? You go, this is the sort of guy I want in charge of my country. Although Boris, as you meant, Boris is now recovered and he stopped spluttering and everybody's happy for him. Ho, ho.
Adds to the drama.
It does. It's lovely. That's what I was saying. It's journalism. It's drama. It's like being a soap opera. I'm not saying that people are not dying. They are. We're not saying that a disease or something is occurring. But measuring it, as John Rappaport said in his reports, you know, it's everybody's got coronavirus. You're carrying it latently, it seems to me, all the time. It doesn't manifest because your immune system is dealing with that and probably 1,001 other things all at the same time, the wonderful little thing. But when you were mentioning pollution just then in Wuhan and elsewhere, our immune system is now being overloaded with stuff. You know, they've been spraying stuff in the air, haven't they, for donkey's years, apparently. Aluminium and things like that, which might not have an instantaneous effect, but they've ground us down. You're thinking, what's going on? Now they could blame it on anything. They could blame anything on it. Oh, you've got COVID. Oh, no, yeah, your legs are going to fall off. Oh, didn't you? Oh, yeah, you need to have a chip for that. It's theirs. They cause the problems. They provide the solutions, and we're all supposed to be happy. I don't think so.
It seems viruses are basically kind of bits of genetic information or material that are always produced inside of our own bodies. That's what I look at, and they're sort of deployed for all sorts of reasons. Genetic information transfer between cells, and this, so that's like viruses, sort of like a electric material generated to amplify internal healing of the body. So it's like, people have been putting up these posts on YouTube and places in America showing cans of spray, you know, to disinfect your house, and it says for the coronavirus on there and all of this. But I think that these things are on us anyway. I think that this whole virus theory, that a virus can spread from person to person, of course, we've been over this as well, that they've been trying to replicate this, that to the point where they're trying to take mucus. They've done tests where they try to take mucus out of sick people and inject it into another person to make that transfer of the virus, and it doesn't work. They have not been able to ever prove that you can transmit and spread a virus from person to person. That has never been proven, just like HIV. It has never been isolated. Measles, never been isolated. Coronavirus, this one that they're telling you, going around the world, the COVID-19, not been isolated. It's all hearsay. It's all smoke and mirrors. None of their viruses, have ever been isolated properly. And I've been researching this myself. I've been following others who are pretty heavy hitters. Like Jim West is a big heavy hitter, and he goes on Quora, and he goes up against, these kind of virologists and people. And they can't answer. They cannot show proof of poliovirus. They can't do it. And a link to the CDC and computer-generated pictures is not a properly identified virus in the laboratory conditions and verified independently. It's a picture, and that's what they always do. So all this thing about viruses spreading around and that they show you in the movies, and they have shown us in the movies all the time, and they've got us used to this. And so now we're shit scared out of our minds because of this virus spreading everywhere. But I myself, until I can see proper this being properly, identified and that can prove it to me, I'm not buying their virus. I don't know anybody who's got it. And just because someone's not well doesn't mean that they have it. Or just because someone's not well or not feeling well in any way, shape or form, whatever it may be, and they go and they get a test and they tell them that they have it, it doesn't mean that they have it. So we just don't know with that. And so the whole virus thing is very up in the air. And I think this has not been proven to me. West Nile, all of these ones throughout history all seem to be, linked to pollution. And you were mentioning there World War II and these Spanish flus and stuff like that. Can you imagine when societies crumble and collapse and banking systems collapse? If you look at the past and you look where people lived through these terrible depressions, I mean, they're going to get sick because, you know, we don't have the our infrastructure crumbles and collapses around us, and people are poor and they become immune compromised and they become ill, and millions of people will die in these conditions, you know, but they, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, just like poliovirus, spraying DDT, which is like Agent Orange, you know, these pesticides on the American people. You can see the footage of this. I've put it up. You can watch it on YouTube, the black and white footage of the 50s in America where they're spraying this DDT powder over everybody. They still do it in India, and they've got polio, right? And they're spraying it on everyone. Then they got these polio symptoms because the, you know, the bodies were reacting and they got terribly sick, and they called it polio. And of course, yeah, it covers for the, you know, the polluting companies. And it creates incredible wealth and business for the pharmaceutical industry, who name these symptoms and come up with vaccines to inject into the people to make them even more sicker. And it's a con that's gone right through history. And and I guarantee you, if people were left to thrive, Paul, and without living in contaminated environments, and we could be who we're really meant to be, and we could live clean lives with healthy water and fresh air and clean food, we wouldn't have these viruses and these flus and all of this. But they've got us, don't they? They've got us under the thumb, and we're under control now. I have never in my life seen anything like this. I cannot believe the amount, the overreach that I'm seeing, the amount of control that they now have over the human population, how everybody is falling into line identically, one after the other, tumbling down this hole to comply with this system, because they believe that if they obey the system, they do what they're told, and they fall into line and they stay inside under lockdown, the curve will bend and we'll get rid of the virus. And then Big Brother will let us out to play and spank us on the bottom. Out you go to play, you know. Make sure you're home by dinner. It's an incredible nanny state type situation that I'm seeing. And everybody around is falling into line. They're a meter and a half apart. They're just like robots going through the system. It's incredible to walk around and watch this. Police questioning everybody. You can't sit down. You've got to be moving. They're coming along. There's all these people standing out front of shops. They're like health community coordinators now with sanitizer, spraying it in your hand. They're sweeping the parks and beaches, telling everybody to move on. You can jog and you can exercise, but you can't sit down. Because if you sit down, you're more likely to get a virus or spread it. But if you move around and jog with all these hundreds of people, you're not going to. None of it makes any sense. It's absolutely ludicrous. It's ridiculous. It's nonsense. And I think if you lock people up too long inside, they're going to go bananas. I really do think that. I think people are going to start going insane.
They are. Somebody sent me some footage that apparently, I think in London, a lot of people had had enough over the weekend, so they just went out anyway. And that will start to happen. I mean, I'm okay. I have a garden where I live, and I don't live in a major city, and I live by the sea. And so in many ways, there's been all sorts of positive things.
You can relax be in the garden and be quiet. Yeah, I understand.
It's a bit tedious. You know, I prefer the liveliness of life, but this is the way it is. And on one level, we've got a lot less planes flying over. I'm directly, well, we're about 30 miles, 40 miles south of Gatwick, which is a really busy airport. And there's a lot of planes fly out from there, particularly to Spain and to the continent nonstop. Well, there just aren't many flying overhead. So the sky's clear. The air quality apparently in cities has improved massively in just 2 weeks, they were saying the other day. We've got, I don't know whether we would have always had them, but I'm really noticing the birds a lot more. They're fantastic. There seems to be a lot of them. We've got a gang of there's a gang of about four or five goldfinches, a wonderful little bird, and it's got this sort of streak of gold in its wing, and it's got a red crescent on its head. It's quite a spectacular thing for dowdy old England, you know what I mean? It's lovely, and it's very noisy. Boy, is it loud, and I'm loving it on one level. The other thing as well about social distancing, perversely, I'm finding this rather fun, and I actually join queues to talk to people in the queues to see where they're at. I'm quite interested. I joined a couple for toilet roll when I didn't even need any toilet roll. But everybody else was joining for toilet roll. So I wanted to get sort of a bit of toilet roll market research. This was a few weeks ago. The toilet roll calamity is now well past us for now. People have stopped behaving like Burks. It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, over here, the option of stockpiling stuff is just a nonsense. It's ridiculous. In America or a large geographical space, it makes a lot of sense. I would definitely do it there. Here, it's almost counterproductive unless you're really up on the tip of Scotland or out on an island somewhere. Because we live cheek by jowl. And the last thing you want known is that your house is full of food and everybody else's is empty. You'd be dead inside. It's not going to turn out nice. Right? People, when circumstances go very bad, human behavior will plummet. This is, and we all know this. And other more primal and lower drives will kick in. You know, they've got that in their armory to whip that out as well. But what I am finding is we consider ourselves over here in England anyway, the world champions at queuing. I mean, it's just a natural character trait. Everybody queues for everything anyway, and people don't push in. And people are frowned upon terribly if they push in. So what's occurring is that over a distance of 6 feet, which I don't mind, I'm starting to talk to people, and everybody's volume's going up to obviously make the sound travel the 6 feet, you see. So we're all getting quite good at shouting and getting the message across. I'm having some fantastic conversations with people in queues.
Shouting.
Just talking to them. There was a lady, a grandma that I was speaking to the other day, and so we had to queue for 20 minutes. I didn't mind. The weather was fine. What's the rush, you know? There's no point. I'm not going to rail against that. I mean, I'm not going to try and convert people to things. I'm just trying to suss out where they are. There's not enough time or energy to do it. I went into a shop to get some vitamin C a couple of weeks ago, and the woman was obviously in a high state of paranoia. She had the mask on, which is pointless, by the way. The masks are just completely pointless.
The dusk mask.
Unless you've got a high-quality one and you work in a hospital, then it makes sense. But for normal people, it's completely mad. And when I went to the counter, she moved back. I wasn't nasty to her. I just actually kind of felt sorry, really. Oh, we've got to behave according to these rules. I went, yes, we do. I'm not going to have an argument with someone about this. What's the point? It's a waste of energy, right? You just have to see where people are at. I'm not going to convert someone. They're already committed. And remember, fear is a very powerful factor in all of this. Their anxiety and paranoia is strong. It's being fed every day. But she moved back. I had to put my card in and pay for it and touch it. She pushed it across to me with a stick. I said, oh, this is fun. Isn't this fun? I said, you know, I just think it's all a joke. So I'm treating it as a joke on one level. Of course, people would say, oh, you won't be saying that if you get it and die. Well, no, but I'll be dead then. I won't be saying anything much, would I? I think we have to live. And my basic observation about this is that the cure is wrong. It's a mess. But then they have a good argument. They're saying it's being transmitted. And until we can prove that it isn't, it's difficult. You know, and I understand their argument has been, well, if we don't contain it now, the number of infections will go through the roof and it would overload the system, that the whole system would break. Now, that's possible because other people are dying because they're laying doctors off. They're laying doctors off. Emergency rooms are very, very quiet now and being transformed into other things, but could really do with a proper report, honestly. And I just don't trust government reports. The BBC is basically a mouthpiece for the government. I'm afraid governments just either consciously or unconsciously lie. They just do that. They don't tell things straight. They're always manipulating for a better position in further communications. So you never get it straight. We need reporters, we need engineers on the job who tell it as it is, in spite of any sort of political diktats that are floating around. So who knows? Either way, I've got to say this as well. This sounds a little bit lame, but whatever decision the politicians take, they're going to be wrong, I suspect. In retrospect, you say, well, you should have done this and you should have done that. And are they all in on this? I don't think so. But it's a bit like a sort of chain reaction. It's like a domino effect. Once something takes hold, takes root as a sort of behavioral pattern, it's difficult to shake people out of it. This has set in pretty quickly. The fear-mongering has been tremendous, and yet the reporting has not been detailed enough. We know, for example, you mentioned Italy. The average age of people dying in Italy is 80.3 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 80.3 is a pretty good innings for most people. We know there are a lot of people living into their mid-90s now, a lot, which is great for them as long as they've got decent health. You won't want to do that and be in agony and suffering all the time. It's a pain in the backside, isn't it? But 80.3 is not bad. Most of those people would have probably been dead anyway within a couple of years. It seems to me that when this thing takes hold, it's a particularly nasty type of flu or force people in certain conditions, and nearly every single one of them had a prior serious condition, 94% of them. So it's affecting some people, and I'm just looking at this thing on John Rappaport's thing about the test. There's all this sort of, you know, test language that they used in their documents, which is tiresome. It's meant to keep us distance, but he breaks it down, and he's just got a bit here where he translates. I won't read you the original bit. He just writes this. He's talking about the company, talking about the test. He says, although this company states the test can detect COVID, it also states the test can read falsely positive if the patient has one of a number of other irrelevant viruses in his body. What is the test proving then? Who knows? Flip a coin. And this is the thing. Corona is a branch. It's a whole body of flus. They're called coronaviruses. COVID-19 is a particular strain. And who knows whether you've got that one or anything else. The other thing, the language I've seen, is they say that people died with corona. They don't say they died of corona. It's possible that nearly everybody dies with corona. You've got it latent in your system. It's like it's the next flu you were about to have. You didn't have it because you died from a heart attack. But they could say, well, you died with corona. So the use of the language is, I don't trust it. I don't trust the language. I think it's been obviously used to further this agenda. And, of course, in the wings, we've got that specky four-eyed git, Bill Gates. Can't wait to start flogging his vaccines. He's out there fear-mongering. And, you know, here's a guy whose operating system never managed to deal with viruses in his entirety of being in charge of the company, and we're supposed to believe him, now that, don't worry about that. I couldn't deal with it in the realm of computers, which is actually my real area of expertise. But in this one, my area of a keen hobbyist, vaccines, I can cure you of viruses. I'm sorry, Bill, but do us all a favor, please, and go away. But he won't. He won't go away.
No.
But, it's ridiculous.
He's found his perfect spot. Yeah, he's talking about these immunity passports, and Bill's talking about you carrying some kind of identification after this if you want to travel or anything that shows that you've had this or you haven't or whatever. We have had some pretty serious vaccination changes in Australia. Mandatory vaccinations, or to offer them in all nursing homes, and also mandatory vaccinations coming through in Victorian Parliament for all Victorian healthcare workers. This means, all healthcare workers and nurses and doctors and even like dentists and all this kind of stuff, I would say, have to have this kind of flu shot. So they went as soon as this started. It was not even out of China yet. They rushed ahead with this. As well.
But doesn't it take 18 months?
Haven't got it through yet, but they
tried to put it through. It takes 18 months to even develop a vaccine and have it verified.
No, I mean, they're talking about the flu.
We'll have one ready next week. I don't think you will.
They're mentioning the flu shot, just the general flu shot.
Right.
Yeah, you have to have the flu shots. And I think this is, because we don't have that yet, the new COVID one. But there definitely is something coming in the future that will incorporate the flu shots and everything. And I think this will be part of our lives. I really do. Even maybe to travel, out of our countries and into our countries and just have basic jobs. And I think definitely for all school children and teachers even, we could start to see this, absolutely. And interesting.
Well, I know that that's what they've got in mind. We know that that's what they've got in mind. We know that they've got command of the high ground of communication, which is the real challenge for us. It really is. It's to do with the platforms of communication that's the main hurdle that we've got. If, for example, this conversation, or a better version of it, or whatever you want to call, was on your national broadcasting TV systems in Australia, if I could get it on the BBC, the mere fact that we would get it onto that platform would transform the way people would perceive the information. It's to do with venues. It's to do with branding in the brain about where the reliable source of authority lies. Of course, over here's the BBC. You can trust us. No, we can't. There's a huge body of people that don't trust the BBC at all. It's one of the most, if not the most, reviled organisation in the UK. It is absolutely an atrocious organisation, and it's the number one weapon pointed at my people that I live with here, Englishmen and Scotsmen and Welshmen. And it's the number one weapon because it's conditioning the mind, and it's providing the perception framing. And that's what we're dealing with. The real virus is the mind virus that's created by false perceptions induced by television and mainstream media. They are not to be trusted. They don't have reporters. They make stuff up. It's sensationalistic. They have people trained. Everybody's now at home watching TV, getting corona brainwashed all day long. Now, many, of course, like us, are using YouTube and other places to get the alternative view, and that's great. And that number is rising as well. So the problem, of course, is that those people that ask questions will soon be painted as troublemakers. You, troublemaker, you, asking questions. You know, you're threatening the health of everybody in the village because you are putting you're sticking your feet in the sand about this vaccine. The question about the vaccine is, what's in it? What is in it, please? They tend to not want to tell you. Do they actually work? Really, seriously, do they work? Everybody says, yeah, of course they work. Well, I don't know. I want some clear reporting. That's me personally. And if we go along with their framing of the argument, we're lost. You see, one of the issues that we have here, in my view, is we have to pay attention and do pay attention to what the bad guys are doing. Right, those that, and by bad guys, I simply mean those who put their own interests above everybody else, and unfortunately just happen to be in positions of power. Unfortunate, of course, is not the real word. They've actually orchestrated this over many centuries to get into these positions of power. They have an agenda which, in the main, doesn't include the welfare of the likes of you and me. That's secondary. Their hobby is to be in charge of everything, a job which we don't need them to do, frankly. There are higher forces already in charge of things, and we don't need human agencies to start meddling with that. But, of course, they can't stop it. So they're paddling away, doing all these things, and they have this command of the high ground. And this is where our real challenge lies, is to get ideas across. And whilst we operate in reaction to their agenda, which is really what we tend to do, we're not going to get anywhere. We don't get anywhere. All that's really happening is that we are becoming more and more informed about the negative state of our condition. Now, that is important, by the way. I'm not saying don't do that. In the absence of anything else, absolutely do that. I spend a lot of my time, and no doubt you do too, you know, reading, researching, looking into other connected areas, you know, all sorts of fields to try and get a handle on why things are the way they are. And why are we doing that? Because in great part, we are dissatisfied with, displeased with the way that things are. We feel alienated from the kind of experiences that we want. And what are they? I would suggest they're very simple, actually. What we're looking for is happy, seriously, happy family living. That's what we're after. What is it that we want positively? What is a positive goal that we wish to attain? And we can frame all the things that we don't like, you will see, run counter to that. For example, you know, you were talking about disease and people in the past being poverty stricken and suffering greatly from malnutrition and these things. It seems to me that the guiding sentence, or a very useful one within the realm of health, is that prevention is better than cure. And yet all we're talking about is cures. Cures for what? Well, for problems caused by the very same people who are providing the cure. They create the problem to provide the vaccine on which – so they make money on both ends. What's happened to the food chain? What has really happened to our food system globally? It's been turned weaponized against us. You've had – since the end of World War II particularly, you've had this thing called the interdependence of nations. What's that all about? Well, that's about setting things up so that a domino effect can be put into motion whenever they see fit to threaten a nation that's stepping out of line. If nation A is dependent on nation B for wheat, for example, and nation A starts to get out of hand, you just tell nation B to stop sending it wheat, because if Nation B continues to send it wheat, you will stop Nation B receiving widgets from Nation C, and so on and so forth. Right? It's a sort of covert coercion and blackmail. That's how it happens. So, you know, the United Nations is massively misnamed. It's not going to unite nations. It's actually involved literally in the business of annihilating them. Because it has to. It's saying we're going to blend all the nations as one. Well, that means the removal of nations, doesn't it? Which means the removal of national identity and distinct cultures. All the things it says it supports, when you look at it, it's actually the enemy of. So if we go back to this thing of prevention being better than cure, and family living being a good thing that we want, which it is the basis of civilization. There's no two ways about it. In the micro level of human living, or macro level, you would have to say that what we really want as a starter is high quality, nourishing food. The sort of food that used to be produced naturally out of the ground without agrochemicals and without all these other things. So we've been taking in toxins and all sorts of other guff through the food system, which has been coerced by the banking system. It's always about this, right? There's always profit. Some profit monger at the tail end of all of these things is required to keep this going. This has spurred on supposed progress in the realm of agriculture by putting more and more crap in the fields, which depletes its value long term. Short term, yeah, you might get a higher yield. But long term, we've been sowing the seeds of our own destruction. Now, those things can't be fixed overnight. So you might say, well, you know, in light of this disease, this is all a little bit academic. But without some consciousness of this, we're just going to continually be in a reactive state. We are in a reactive state against their agendas. You know, we're going to do this. Oh, I think they will do that. And the more we resist their agendas, the more rapidly they come about. You see, it doesn't work how we think. It's not about resistance to them. It's about promotion of what we want. And we don't do that. We're so busy being distracted that we've forgotten what we want. In fact, we don't even state it half the time. If you ask normal people what they want, I want a good job and this, that, and the other. But when you break it down, why do you even want that? I mean, you know that all these arguments that we hear continually about the economy and economic progress and the balance of payments, and the economy is not growing enough. It's twaddle. The whole thing is it's madness. It's total rubbish. It's like inviting you to be good at a game which ultimately hurts you. Why would you want to do that? No one even breaks it down. You don't need economic progress. There's no such thing. It's rubbish. It's a total lie. Economists are a joke because they never, and I mean it sincerely, I don't care how intelligent or brilliant they are in analyzing this, that, and the other, none of them take into account or communicate about the dysfunctional nature of the banking system. And it's a bit like I'm asking you to build a house with a tape measure, which you never examine, but I give you a different tape measure each day where the inch is slightly different length each day. And after you've been working on it, the house is just looking more, you go, wow, the bloody hell did that happen? And I'm just chortling away because people are not examining the fundamentals. So there are a lot of really basic problems. And getting out of a reactive state against the baddies and championing our own cause is really the challenge, I think. And it sounds a little bit naff because people look around and they go, well, we don't have any power and we can't do anything. Well, unfortunately, the more we talk like that, the more the situation will continue to exist. And there have been people in the past, within recent history, who have got their act together and have sorted themselves out. And the speed with which you can do it is immense. The only problem, I would say, is this, historically. Any nation that begins or has, and we can look back over the 20th century, right through to Libya, you know, recently, in recent times, the beginning of the 21st century, any nation that's got its act together on the level of economy and has constrained the central bank or put the central bank literally as a tool for the use of the people, as an asset for the people, in every single case, they get bombed, literally. Bombs fall out of the air and blow them to bits. And this is part of the problem. So that might seem a long way away from looking at COVID-19, but there is a huge sort of chain reaction of thought and cause and effect in this that leads us to where we're at right now today. It's useful to know it, but it's still, that's not a replacement per se for where we are supposed to go. We want to live good, decent, clean lives. And you know, you were talking about people queuing and being obedient. And in a certain light, that is a negative. In another light, it's a tremendous positive. It really is. That people behave well in times of duress, is reassuring. It's fantastic. That they don't understand the cause of their duress is the problem.
Mm.
Because ultimately, they're not going to fix the actual root of the problem. And we're not going to fix it now either. Because, you know, talking about banking and stuff, it's a snooze fest, isn't it? Really, seriously. You want to go to sleep? You want someone to put you to sleep? Get them to start talking about, you know, fractional reserve banking. You'll be asleep 20 seconds. And I think one of the reasons for that, this is just an aside, but one of the reasons for that is that money, finance, purchasing power, anticipation of future wealth, your savings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, these topics occupy people's thoughts and motives a great deal under the current system, understandably. And in nearly all cases, or the vast majority of cases, you will find at the base for just about everybody a high level of frustration, and that's what they begin to associate money with. It's frustrating. They're not necessarily poverty stricken, but they're generally broke. They're just tiddling around above and below the waterline. And this is why what's occurring with this, you know, it's a topic of tremendous deep pain. It really is. People go, I don't want to don't talk to me about money. I don't want to talk about tax. Who does, right? I mean, there's like this weight comes down on you, just like, can we not talk about that, please? And I understand absolutely why, but that's its great power. It sort of subdued us over centuries into this condition of forgetting what we are supposed to want, as it were, that's good and wholesome. And we have to endure this toxic system, which has been designed not in our interests. So that's the challenge. And we're seeing all these manifestations right now. And what's going on? Let's just come back to this Amazon thing. Right now, you're seeing it happen. Productive businesses are going to go bust. These small and medium-sized businesses are going to go bust. And they're going to be mopped up by billionaires who are going to tell you, it's okay, we've got a more efficient distribution system. I don't want one. I don't want whatever you've got, I don't want any of it. And we almost like have to form a union, a trades union of normal people. We've got to form something. I don't know what it, I mean, we're forming it in these conversations, don't you think? I think it's everywhere and it's wonderful. And it's decentralized, which is also good because it means that there's no one particular target that the other side can hack. But we have to muster ourselves. What they have planned, their ideas are so crap. They're so bloody useless. They're so childish and pathetic, right, that we need to put them in their place. But if we don't organize and get clear about what we want, we're not going to get it. You know, there's that phrase, you better decide what you want, because if you don't, or what you want to do with your life, if you don't, somebody else will. And that's really the situation. Other people have decided what you're going to have in your life. You're going to have a chip, aren't you? You're going to have a vaccine because it's for your good. They're telling you that. And when you go in and out of a building, you don't worry. It's all going to be super safe. I don't want it to be super safe. And we're going to have these smart buildings. I don't want smart buildings. I want smart buildings burnt to the ground. I'm not interested. I want fat men at the entrance to hotels that bumble around a bit and that I can have human interaction with. And I want it all inefficient and silly. And I want people smoking everywhere if they want to do it. I want us to be human beings, not some sort of, you know, coordinate in a digital matrix system. And that's really what they're after. So, sorry, I went on a bit there. But I think all these things are massively, they're all interconnected. And just coming back to where we started from, you know, there are many, many threads in this current situation, and they're all there, they're all valid, they're all being pulled, and we need to be awake and keep looking at things. And people like yourself and John Rappaport, who are reporting and getting the data accurately, these are vital things that we need. We can form our opinions more clearly and know that we're stood on solid ground when we're in the presence of facts, and we're lost when we're in the presence of hysteria. And unfortunately, the mainstream media is just a massive hysteria machine mostly these days.
Mm. Yeah, well said, man. I agree with you. I do. Yeah, it's goodness knows if we will identify all of this that you've been talking about now, if we can wake up to this and see it in time,
More of us are doing that. I don't want to get too negative. More of us are definitely doing it.
I do, but that's why they've acted, isn't it? I mean, I've been talking about this on shows. There's been so much ill ease and so much a display of people being unhappy all around the world. Wherever you look, you know, so many countries, just you get millions of people on the streets and people unhappy in these kinds of situations, and they want change, they want more. And, you know, but it's a really hard system because, you know, you have technology come into play here, you know, and so much technology coming into play now on our young people. And it's just getting so overwhelming. And, you know, that's a big part of the system as well that we need to recognize and kind of push that back. And we need to work out for ourselves where, as you said, where we want to go and who we want to be. And you're right. Yeah, the whole money thing you mentioned, and I think it is that constant treading water thing, not drowning, waving or something. I don't know. It's like trying to keep your head above the quicksand all the time. Just keep your nose above it, and you're always just treading and treading and treading when it comes to money, because you work every day and you pay bills and bills, and you're just paying to survive. You're not paying to live and have a happy life. You're just existing, you know. A lot of people are, and I think if you ask most people, they would want more, and they're not happy with this current state. But it doesn't mean, as you said, they're bad people. And I do see that. I do agree with what you said. People are lining up, which is a good thing. I will take that myself as well. They are complying. They're lining up, but they don't know why. And that's the question they need to ask themselves. But that's kind of like Stockholm syndrome a little bit for me, that capture bonding sort of identifying with your captor, you know, a little bit. But
it's amazing. Context. I think the whole thing, it's context, isn't it? You see, depending on what the context is for a particular behavior, you can measure whether it's sensible or not. And you're right. Stockholm syndrome is, we've all got it to some degree. All of these things occur with all of us. The kicker is to be awake whilst it's going on.
Aware.
Just aware. You know, it's like they're saying, they're brainwashing you. And I turn and I go, I know. But because I know, they can't.
That's right.
When you know they're brainwashing you, when you see it, it's you just incredible. Start laughing at it.
It's incredible.
It just floats right through you. You can then pick apart their brainwashing. You're not brainwashing me effectively enough. You can really take the mickey out of them. But everybody that resists it goes, no, this is not brainwashing. You're totally locked in. It's that, you know, the thing by, what's his name? Oh, I've forgotten his name. The German guy. No people are, I'm paraphrasing terribly. Those are most enslaved who think they are free. That one, I absolutely mullered that. You know, there's a quote from a German, none are more enslaved than those who falsely think they are free. That really is the key.
We're doing it to ourselves. That's the amazing thing. They've made us do it.
They've made us enslave ourselves. They train you to lock your own mind.
We've done it to ourselves. That's what I keep saying now. Yeah, it's not them doing it anymore. It's us to ourselves. We are running the
system.
Well,
you could thank them. You could thank them. They're like really harsh teacher. But you must get that. You've got to get clued in. You know,
yeah,
got to get clued. Goethe, by the way, name came to me. So that's from Goethe or Goethe, depending on however you want to pronounce it. So, but that's absolutely bang on. And it's always like that. And it's a never-ending challenge throughout life of stepping outside of yourself and doing a bit of third-party analysis of yourself from a distance, going, look at you, idiot, you're doing, it's really important. It's like having, so most people, unfortunately, only see things in the first degree. This is the main problem. They only see things as they are presented to them from them as the observer witnessing the thing, and they're at the effect of it. That's one, and it's true. That is one level of consciousness on it.
They're not observing. But when you start to see things in,
that's right. Then the second degree is you step out of that and watch both parties, you and the other party, from a dispassionate point of view.
The painter painting a picture of himself.
Correct. And so, you know, we don't want to, you know, people got to go to the pub and do things and have a simple approach to things. I'm very, very aware of that. I'm mistrustful of too much complexity in these things because the message can't reach very far. However, what we're seeking to do, I think, as individuals, is to get the process going in each individual. Is not to, it can't maintain it. Every single one of us sees events completely differently. That's why you exist, almost. Not why, but it's definitely an aspect of existence. You get two people together, you generally get five opinions on things. You don't know what's going on. Really, do we? I've said things today which coincide with things, but not exactly with you. And that's not right or wrong. It's the same everywhere. We've got these, we're bound to have slightly different perceptions. It's part of the joy of life. It's part of that nuancing. It's part of the frustration as well. Why can't that Dumbo see things, you know? Well, he can't today, maybe next week. All of us, you know, are kind of stupid in the face of things that we're not aware of. We bumble around a bit, and thankfully we don't come to too much harm. But to get that process of questioning, and I think that's the thing. What would you say is present here in this conversation? We're questioning things. We're going, I don't know about that. Can you prove that? Right. Whereas most of the consumers, the grazers in front of the TV, are just going, what do we do about this? You know, and I'm going, well, do about what? What do you think they've said to you? Oh, well, all this is going on. Really? I don't see that. I don't think they proved anything. So it's a different stance. So it's like being cynical to some degree. And I don't mean sort of like as a default position, but there's an aspect of that. You have to, there's a part of me that wants to be that wonderful, naive, idiotic teenager that we all were. It's just fabulous. I'm sorry. It just is great, right? You feel that you're bulletproof. So to some degree, you become bulletproof, right? And you go around banging into the world and getting it all wrong. But because you are so confident about things, you know, you're always right, aren't you, about stuff. It's only after, as the years tick by and you find that things are not working out as you thought they were, as your imagination was telling you, that you begin to hopefully correct your behavior and get things back on track. It's tricky, but there's a wonderful buoyancy and spontaneity and optimism, and I think it's useful to remember that. I try to remember it every now and again, and to live in that little space stupidly and childishly every now and again, because there's great beauty in the world in spite of all this madness, and it's important to remind yourself of it from time to time. I do think this, because otherwise we are just mired in this analytical garbage that are produced by these dysfunctional wretches at the top of things. Their plight is ridiculous. It's not that they're unintelligent. It's not that they're not clever, but you would have to say that when it comes to the realm of wisdom, they seem to be impoverished beyond belief. It's almost as if their aptitude for manipulation of structures and of information has pushed out those aspects of a character which would naturally care for others and be of concern. You don't think of these people like that, do you? You don't think, there goes Henry Kissinger, a warm, good-hearted man. Mm. No one thinks that. No one thinks that about any of them. Because they're not that. Because your instincts are straight. Your instincts go beyond the words. And you look at these people and you go, you know, I've said this to people before. You want to analyze the character of these people or get a sort of gut reaction? Ask yourself this question. Would you let them babysit your children? Mm. Watch yourself internally vomit when you think about the idea of that. Nearly all of them. You just go, good grief.
You wouldn't let Bill Gates mind your kids then, Paul? Jeez.
No.
That's just racist.
I know. I wouldn't. You know, I just wouldn't. I don't know about that. I'm not even, it's sociopathic or whatever, but they're not, in my worldview, as it is today, I tend to not trust them because they're always involving measures they never invite me to participate in the decision. So I'm not playing. I don't give my consent. There you go. They go, well, you might die. I go, well, I'll die then. So what? I'm not afraid of death. Everyone's going to die. Yeah, big deal. So what? And of course, they've got everybody running around going, you're all going to die. Well, we're all going to die. Everybody's going to die. What we're saying is we'd rather not die before our time, and we don't really want to die in agony. Thank you. Yeah, I'm for that. I'd like to avoid that too. Yeah. But what kind of agony? What kind of mental prison do you think that they're putting around us? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous situation. Everybody believes that the economy it comes first. It doesn't. It doesn't. You come first.
It does.
You do. You've got to, but we're all brainwashed. They say, well, the economy's suffering. Oh, yeah, the economy. It is. What's
true.
That then?
I know. I always
it's insane.
Hear that. Yeah, the economy.
It's
the
insane,
economy.
Isn't it?
It's like the body
the
of
everybody. The
economy's
suffering. If you actually sit there, if you've got a pencil and a piece of paper, anybody do this, sit down. You write down what most people need. It's less than 10 items on the list. You need a house. You need a maintenance budget for the house. You need power and services going into it, your water, electricity, gas, whatever you need, right? You need some transport. You need food and clothing. And you need a wife or a husband and a family to love. really. Now, you've got that, and you need a bit of ground so that you want to be close enough that you've got neighbours that you can get warm with, but you don't want to be too close that when they have a row, it's like they're in your kitchen, right? There's a thing about distancing. There is, you see, there's social distancing.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they didn't bother with that when they were building all these flats, did they? You need to pull all the flats down. How can people social distance in a flat complex? Flats are terrible things.
They're standing on each other's heads.
Yeah, they're like putting people in an ant colony. It's ridiculous. We don't want that.
Well, I guess, oh, there isn't, I guess,
enough
with
land.
The social,
yeah, there is. There's enough land.
I guess with the social distancing, Paul, one that I've noticed is everyone's going to be super fit because in Australia you're not allowed to stay still. You can be out, but you've got to be exercising. It's almost like they've come into a nation of fat people and said, right, you can't sit down. If you sit down, you get fined. You've got to move. And everybody's moving. The cars are moving. The people are walking. No one's sitting down. Everyone's moving really quick this way and that way. It's amazing. And if you go down the beach or the park and you sit there, they can give you a fine or someone can come up and move you along.
Yeah.
They want you to be fit.
Well, that's, you know, a lot of people. Yeah, of course it's a good thing. It's there a good thing. But what we really want, I mean, you know, what I'd say is what you're really looking for is sort of a spiritual fitness in people, which is a vague concept. I understand that. You know, people say, well, what do you mean by that? But it's a natural sense of buoyancy. What's occurring in this process? What is occurring is that people are being demoralized about the future. And if you buy into it, you become demoralized too. It's as if this is the only way. Bill Gates is apparently now the only guy who's got the answer to this is vaccine, vaccine, vaccine to stop all these people dying. I don't think so. As I said, if we go back 100 years, 50 million people died from Spanish flu. 50 million. That was horrific. And the conditions of that were way worse than this thing. They were terrible, right? Did they shut everything down? No. They didn't. And we don't need to now. And I'm not saying you act in an unintelligent way. We want 50 million people dead from this. That's not what I'm saying at all. But there are ways of actually managing this that do not include this nonsense. It just so happens that all of their solutions, hey-ho, what a surprise, just happen to play into the hands of more centralized control of power in ever fewer hands. And if you look at things like Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030, and the ID 2020 movements and all this other twaddle that comes out of the United Nations. What's amazing about it is that every single item on their list, we want, I would suggest, the exact opposite with only a few exceptions. They say things like, we want a one world government. No, we don't. We want a global central bank. No, we don't want that at all, actually. We want the removal of national armies and one world army. No, we want national armies. It's fantastic. They've gone to the charter. They want the destruction of the family units written down there in the charter. Well, we don't want that at all. That's right at the top of the list for me. So once, if you destroy that, and that really is, if that gets destroyed, which is what they're seeking to do in social arrangements, how are they able to do this? They're able to do it because the television is conditioning everybody to a worldview where the family is being seen more and more as a dysfunctional proposition. It's not. It's not. It's dysfunctional people that cause dysfunctional families, and they are seeking to create dysfunctional people. So once you've got people isolated from the potential of families, and you've got them isolated from a sense of camaraderie with their own kith and kin from their own nations, you've got this pliant blob of cellular life called a human, and it fits into their, you know, it's just like a node in a computer system. How dull is that? These are like, you know, sick, evil nerds with computers. And you're going, you know, all these tools that we've created can be used for good or bad. Guns are bad. No, they're not. Guns are not bad at all. They help me defend myself against lunatics like you. I'm not a lunatic. Well, I think you are if you're going to come here and try and take my stuff, mate. So our structures are up for grabs. And this is a great opportunity for us. I think you must try and see things in a positive light whenever you can. I mean, it could get so bad that there's no time to even think of it like that. But the whole idea of democracy is a crock. It's a joke, right? We don't live in one. And all they do is that they slowly devolve into what you've got right now, which is basically a sort of crypto-fascism, basically. You can't help anything else. These guys at the top have got trillions. Why do they need them? Oh, to manage industry. Well, we don't need you to do that, right? Yeah, you can earn a lot of money if you want. If you want to earn $1 billion, I don't know whether you put a cap on these things, but what's occurring is they get bored. I mean, and most people think, oh, it's just that they want to have a yacht. No, they don't. Who wants a bloody yacht? I mean, you might want one. You're near the sea. I mean, I might want use of one a few times in my life. I won't mind going on one, but I don't want one. Is everybody supposed to have a yacht or something or a gin palace and floating around? And we're all sold on these ideas that you need more stuff to be happy. We don't. We need less stuff. It's less stuff. We don't need all this stuff. So they're at the end, you know, mobile phones have hit a brick wall in terms of all the new gadgets and whiz-bang things. There's nothing new on them. They've just got bigger and better cameras and all this kind of stuff. And I don't even take pictures with mine. I mean, everybody's obsessed with taking photographs of everything. I don't want to know. I've got my own life to lead. So, you know, I'm whittering a bit here. But you get the idea. The whole framework is dictated by relatively few hands. And when it's 24-hour-a-day blanket coverage into the mind, that's its power. It's not that directly things in what they're doing are all bad. It's that most people don't get to step out of that and to see or consider what is the natural healthy picture. And in essence, we've got a fight between those men who think they know better than nature and our instincts to stay connected to nature and natural law.
Yep.
And
that's right.
The latter is the only one that works. Nature kicks our ass every single time. It's very patient with us, but it will kick it.
Yep.
And it will kick it as hard as it needs to stop this nonsense going about. And, you know, just because a few billionaires are bored and want to run the world doesn't mean to say that they get to.
Really?
You know what I mean? Hey, Bill, pack it in, you numpty, right? We're not interested in your dozy ideas, you dipstick. You know, go away. And me just saying that is meaningless, but we need kind of platforms where these rebuttals could take place. Seriously, if you've got these guys in a pub, I was saying this a lot, if you've got any of these guys in a pub, these sorts of people, and had a chat with them, you better take them apart. It's because they're protected by this veneer of this perception of their magnificence held together by the media and their magazine and newspaper coverage. And here I am in my $300 million house and all this kind of stuff. It's like, oh, really? God, that's a waste of time. That's my response. I go, is that it then? You just buy bigger houses. Dope. You know, who cares? You see what I mean? They need their bubble bursting and we can burst it, which is why they won't let us near them to burst it. We can burst their bubble easy. I think a guy that really did it well was George Carlin. Fantastic. You know, brilliant observations. And he got heavier and heavier as he got towards the tail end. But he understood exactly what was going on. And it wasn't really comedy that he was doing. He was observing exactly the way that society had been mismanaged. And it's removing the joy from life. These people are joy removers. And they won't be liked. They're not going to be cherished throughout history. And they're lost. They can't step out of their own perception to see what's going on. They're not stupid. They're massively intelligent. I understand all this. I know that they've had a fantastic upbringing in terms of education. They've been made privy to societal management techniques that you and I are probably never going to see. These things that are ancient, that go back throughout the kings, all the way back to Egypt and Babylon and so on and so forth. Yeah, they've all got that. Great. But it's still crap what they're doing. It's rubbish. It is. It's rubbish, you know. And we just go, no, you know, this is really, that's my take on it. I use it as a defense mechanism, you see, to make sure that I've got some sense of buoyancy and foundations in my own life and to remind myself what's important. And simple things, moments spent with those people that you love and that you interact with, and loving also involves a little bit of fighting and shouting from time to time, but that connection, it's just a great gift. It's a joy. And I'm very, you know, thankful that I get those moments. And you see the direction that they're taking things in. Looks to me as though it's going to reduce those sorts of moments. Everything is a kind of organized, serious, tedious misery. They have no sense of humor. These people. Really? You think they've got a sense of humor? There's something wrong with them. They're not right. And they're like little automatons themselves. And
they're
very, very cross when we don't pay attention to them. Yeah, you've got to listen to me because I run the banking system. We know what's best for everybody. You don't, mate. Everybody's different. All at play.
You reminded me when you were talking there about that movie, an old 80s movie called Trading Places. Remember that?
With Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Yep. I think it was Richard Pryor. And there was like these really mega rich dukes who made one of the rich boys in their firm poor, and they made the black fella
the Duke
brothers. Rich. Yeah, but it was all over a dollar bet, and they ruined their lives.
Dan Aykroyd. Just, yeah, I know. It's apparently, they did.
You know, and they were so, these old guys were so rich and so bored that they decided to have this dollar wager and mix them up, their lives. And the rich guy became dirt poor, and the poor black fella became rich. And it was all a big joke for them. There you go. They're so bored with they're playing with us. And they show you in the movies. It's amazing where their entertainment. So I think what you're saying there is we need to start looking at things differently and start thinking differently, and start running our own lives. It's an amazing thing, man. Anyway, it's incredible.
Live in incredible times. Looking to the past is very useful. Looking to those good parts of the past, because it enables you, gives you the intellectual defense mechanisms or the ideas and the thoughts to deal with this more effectively so that you don't become disturbed in the way that they want to disturb you. We're always being knocked off balance by their stuff. And it's like somebody dominating the music at a party. You've set up a party and they turn up, they keep putting their music and they go, "Will you clear off?" Really? Go away, organize your own thing. But they want to be in control of all these things. They know best on all levels. Well, they don't. We don't know that for anybody. Nearly every idea that they've got, when you analyze it and pull it apart, as I said, is useless. It's very, very bad because all of these ideas funnel into more and more power and control for them because they've got some, why? I would suggest because they have a disconnection with God or whatever force you may want to label it, the higher forces at play, they absolutely exist. Here we all are running around in our bodies and nobody even knows how their liver works, really. A clue. Our body's doing, right now, your and my bodies are doing tons of stuff. I have no idea. I have no idea. Well, I was talking about the other day. We said, what if you had to do it all consciously? True. Oh, no, I forgot to make my lungs move. You can't do any of it. So there's masses of stuff going on. And you've been gifted life, and yet these guys, they don't know that either, but they run around and tell you they know how to run the world. Yeah, right. It's a joke.
Yeah, it seems.
Our instincts are good. It is. It's a joke.
It seems they're using, as we said before, they want us to destroy ourselves through manipulation, through their words, through their content, and they want us to destroy our own ships or our own cars, our own bodies, our own vessels, willingly. We do it to ourselves. That's how they've been able to master this plan and get away with it. It's like that's an incredible thing. If you look at it that way, it's like we're doing it to ourselves, and they don't even have to touch us. It's also the power of suggestion almost. And we take our own ships down, our own flights down, and we blame ourselves. And that's the way it's always been. And that's how they stay on top. It's an incredible system. And that's what we need to turn around. Anyway.
It is.
Anyway, good to speak with you. You've got a busy schedule and things to occupy yourself over there in the UK. So
there's nothing to do. There's nothing to do over here. Everything's
I'm sure you've got your birds to chat with and your tea to drink in your garden.
I'll just go into my counting house and count all my money. I might do that this afternoon. Absolutely. I'll try and avoid all those gold blocks in the hall and everything. And then I'm going to go and polish my yacht. And then I've got a helicopter to buy. Yeah, and just all these toys, and then wonder what I'm doing. No. the peace and quiet's good. Maybe, who knows what the effects of this will be. It's quiet here in the country. I think that's good. It's almost as if the land and the people are having a rest, even though they're anxious. Who knows? People are thinking. That's what I would say. At least on a positive, my last little positive note is people have got this time, and although many people are getting bored and don't know what to do, that is definitely going on. Others are thinking a little bit more deeply because they've got thinking time. For the first time in ages, the hectic distraction hullabaloo of life is not so strongly present. And so all sorts of thoughtful considerations are beginning to rise up in people. Who knows where it may lead? I think it could be very fertile time for many of us.
Hopefully.
And I hope so. Very much. Yes.
I know that Pornhub are seeing like 40% increase in their website traffic in many countries.
Well, that kind of runs counter to what I was just saying, doesn't it? But there you go. Thanks for that. Are we surprised now? There'll always be, you know, the appeal of the lower realms, as it were, to draw people in. But there you go. Let's hope there's a 40% increase in people reading.
That's what I'm saying. It's the old saying, Paul, use your time wisely. And that manipulation, just because you're inside and you're not working, whatever it is, that manipulation's still there. It will get you. Use your time wisely. And maybe for a lot of us, this will create more family time and more time to think. And also what I was saying on earlier podcast, Paul, this might actually make people sort of critically think more in regards to, hey, I don't need all this stuff that I've got that you mentioned before. You know, a lot of people around, you know, getting into so much debt and credit card debt and buying all these cars on credit and rebuilding houses and getting so much stuff that they don't actually need, and so many toys and gadgets and things for their kids. Maybe it might make them think, you know. Maybe we should start trying to unload some of this stuff and sell it off and get rid of it and just go back to basics, as you said. Have the electricity, have your place, have your food, have your family units, be happy. You don't need all this stuff. I'm hoping that might
happen. No, you need to be left alone. It's not wealth that people are after. It really isn't wealth that you're after, or riches, even though people think it is, in my view. What people really want, the vast majority, is the absence of bills and being pestered.
That's right.
And it's a difference. And then we can be calm. And then in calm, thoughtful spaces, mm-hmm. our real qualities will blossom more fully.
Well, it's given the opportunity to thrive.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, a plant's not going to grow and bloom if you keep treading on it.
Absolutely right.
There you go. Great to speak with you, man. Always good to chat with you. Stay safe, stay sane, and enjoy empty streets over there and the clean air and the birds. Good stuff.
Will do.
Anyway, yeah, okay. Chat soon, man.
Fantastic. Keep well. Thanks, good. Paul. And to all your listeners too. Yeah, thank you. Bye for now. Bye-bye.